From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Trust in the federal government is in the low double digits. That's according to a September 2018 Gallup poll. It's not a sudden phenomenon, though. The Government Finance Officers Association reports that trust in people who hold public office has been declining steadily over the past 15 years. But despite declining trust in the federal government, Gallup tells us that Americans have significantly more faith in their local governments. Some of the reasons people are more likely to trust municipal government include greater citizen access, face-to-face interactions with both elected officials and employees. Local governments also manage roadway improvements, waste and recycling services, maintain public safety and parks, and they develop local policy, impacting the quality of citizens' lives often in a more tangible way. In delivering these services, local governments also seek public engagement. Media stories about which highway improvement projects might get funded according to a mathematical prioritization scheme, unless very publicly controversial, can turn decidedly dry, unsexy, and generate little public interest. All that, despite the fact the information is often easily accessible. Are citizens empowered by the availability of that information? Do they engage? Do they have the time and interest? Does more transparency lead to increased civic engagement? We're exploring those questions today. Melissa Talbert is the communications manager for the City of Wilmington. Melissa Talbert, welcome to Coastline.
Hi, Rachel.
And Perry James is a CPA and financial and operational consultant with the North Carolina League of Municipalities. He is also the former chief financial officer for the City of Raleigh. Perry James, welcome to the program.
Good. Thank you. Hello.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. How do you engage with local government? Would you like to get more involved or at least stay more aware? What's stopping you? You can reach us today at 910-343-1138 or via email on this Wednesday at coastline@whqr.org. Just last week, the Rochester, Minnesota City Council passed a City Government Transparency Act. It was one of their first big actions of 2019. So the city will now video record, live stream, and archive all official meetings. That includes committee, board, commission meetings. Does Wilmington, Melissa Talbert, record committee meetings? And why or why not?
Well, I'm proud to say that we do. We're very fortunate that our city council invested public dollars several years back. And as you know, we not only live stream our city council meetings and our planning commissions, we also record our historic planning commission meetings and our various smaller boards, like our subcommittee review boards and technical review boards, things that sound pretty boring but can be very important because that's the building block of what goes up to the next level before it gets to city council, several different levels of review. We also record those meetings and put them online, the audio and whatever other materials may be with those. With the city council meetings and our agenda briefings, we also provide all the backup materials for the legislative actions that the elected body will be taking. So we've made great strides in that area, I think. There is a lot of information available. We can always do more, I would certainly say. But in that regard, yes, we have done that.
In terms of doing more, because we're always picking at what's not right or what needs to be improved upon, what is the next step with the City of Wilmington?
You know, that's a great question, and I think one is that should not be posed to me so much as, number one, our elected body. Because they represent the people. And then our citizens themselves certainly should have a say. We try to make all the information available, make it understandable, because a lot of what government does seems inscrutable, not very understandable. But I think that's up for our citizens to decide what they're interested in and how we spend their money.
Perry James, the GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association, points out that increasing openness and transparency may have hidden costs and unintended consequences. And they use this example of the 1970s, Watergate and the Vietnam War. There were other issues at the time, and Congress decided to open subcommittee meetings to the public. And what they discovered was, well, the average citizen didn't have the means or the interest in monitoring all those subcommittee meetings. Special interests and lobbyists sure did. So can you kind of help us understand what some of the challenges there are? Certainly, lobbyists are less likely to pay attention to a City of Wilmington subcommittee meeting.
Right. Certainly. Transparency is a concept that's been around now for a while, but I think it's now evolving to be a smarter type of transparency. As the GFOA reported, there can be unintended consequences. If you put out data just in raw form and there's not really an interpretation associated with it, then everybody can see it and interpret it differently. An example is like pension information. That's one of the things that the accounting world now says you got to put on your balance sheet, and there's some pretty staggering numbers that without some interpretation of what it means, the residents can feel that that's just an unnecessary burden and push to have pensions changed and all kind of different things.
So that's a very specific example, putting out pension numbers, say, on a balance sheet. Explain why that can be problematic. Because at first blush, when I hear we're putting out raw data and people can interpret it the way they would like to, that sounds like the democratic process.
Right. And it is. It is. This is generally good information. It's, again, the idea of giving some understandability to it that sometimes is missing. Pensions, another thing is retirement health care benefits is one of the big accounting issues right now that creates some big numbers that without some understanding of it, you don't realize that that's got some prior costs that really amortize basically over a number of years. And so you're paying for it slowly. You're just really disclosing some numbers that are going to have to be managed.
The Grace Street Project, Project Grace, Melissa Talbert, which will redesign an entire downtown Wilmington block, is an example of what from the outside might look like less public engagement than people really wanted about that project. This is a project that will likely demolish the current New Hanover County Public Library building. And it really brought up some public ire when it was first announced. Anecdotally, we heard people saying officials are going to tear down this historic building in downtown Wilmington with little public notice and little public input. Is that a fair complaint in this case?
That's a project with New Hanover County, so I'm not really sure. I don't know all the details. I know in a project like that, generally with any of the local governments, there are several points along the way where you can provide input. A project like that, like the River Place project going down on Water Street where the old Water Street deck was, there is inherently going to be conflict because there's great change. So we've seen in other big projects, you may see initially a lot of angst or negative feedback. And then over time, as you start to see the project actually develop and come into being, a lot of times we won't see the amount of negative feedback. And matter of fact, it may change over time into positive feedback. So those types of projects are one where you're never going to make everybody happy. You try to do what is the best for the greater good and be responsible with the public dollars. I'm sure that's what New Hanover County is doing in this case. You go through a long multi-year process till you get to the point where you're actually, the bulldozer's on site and you're digging and starting the project.
But New Hanover County is soliciting City of Wilmington input on that project, yes?
Yes, I'm sure they did.
And so is there any engagement? I mean, could there be a dual engagement process here, City of Wilmington and New Hanover County, when it comes to a project that's going to change the face of a big part of the downtown of the City of Wilmington?
I'm sure there could. Generally, we will work with their staffs on projects like that and say, okay, what do you think? What are the requirements for the City of Wilmington? What if if we are going to do growth, we know what our guidelines are and what we want to see for positive growth and how that might fit into that. And we certainly would provide feedback on an ongoing basis for something like that.
Harry James, what would the GFOA say about a public engagement process when it comes to a large project that might alter a downtown landscape in terms of best practices for public engagement?
Yeah, well, that would be very important to GFOA. The whole idea of GFOA is that they're advocating best practices by state and local governments. So that kind of situation would be one where they would say, yes, citizen input is vital to that because you're talking about large dollars, you're talking about things that will impact them for a long time. And yes, they would say that that's the kind of thing that they would want public input to. In fact, they make a good point in the report that interpersonal contact is really one of the strongest ways to have trust in what the government is doing. So the more you can develop that trust through those interactive meetings, the better.
And we're going to talk more about how the city of Wilmington engages with the public, some of the ways that it gets public feedback. You're listening to Coastline. We're learning about local government transparency with two people who've spent a lot of time in local government. Melissa Talbert is communications manager for the City of Wilmington. Perry James served as Raleigh's CFO before becoming a consultant for the North Carolina League of Municipalities. And we want to hear from you. How would you like to interact with your local government? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You are listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, it's an exploration of local government transparency and increasing public trust, and that moving target of civic engagement. With us to answer your questions on this Wednesday, Perry James, former CFO for the City of Raleigh and current operational consultant for the North Carolina League of Municipalities. Melissa Talbert is communications manager for the City of Wilmington. If you'd like to ask your own question on this Wednesday, you can do so by calling us at 910-343-1138 or by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Perry James, just before we went to break, you were explaining how the GFOA mm-hmm. kind of identifies public engagement as a critical part of not just policy development, but making a change, for instance, to a downtown landscape in a city. So can you tell us, can you give us examples, according to the GFOA, of what public engagement might look like?
Sure. Again, that's what government should be about, is the kind of the doing of projects and services that the residents need and want, but doing it in a forum that they feel trustful toward what's being done and support them when it's all said and done. So, you know, every community would probably do that citizen engagement differently. There's some formal things that you have to have, like public hearings at certain governing board meetings and so forth, but generally, the governments that want to do it well will go overboard to try to go ahead and set up these citizen meetings to come in from the very beginning and give them both ideas and later feedback on some of the projects like we've been talking about here. It's very important, and that's kind of a cornerstone of what the GFOA report was talking about.
And it's interesting you use the language governments that want to do it well. And Melissa Talbert, you mentioned River Place, this project downtown. First of all, explain to us what this project is, how it will change the face of downtown, and this very long public engagement process that's gone on with it.
Yes, that's River Place is a $80 million plus dollar project. It's public-private partnership, fairly unusual for city government. It will be much like the Grace Street project. It will be mixed use, mostly residential, but some retail, also even some green space in there. We'll also be making, Chestnut, that little portion, and Bijou Park on the other side. We'll be making both of those more pedestrian as well. So it'll really open up that area and make it more accessible from Front Street down to Water Street more accessible to the river, which is, of course, is why we're all downtown to begin with. So really, it is a transformative project. You're going to see a 10-story building up going there, which is about the same height as the Murkison Building. And there's nothing there now. Before, there was just this terrible, awful, dilapidated parking deck that was only two stories. So it's really going to transform that area. One of the nice things about it is that because it is right on the water and we don't want this just eyesore, wasted space, the parking deck will be wrapped really literally inside the building. So you won't see the parking deck, even though it will be there. The public portion of that is the parking, because we know that parking, even particularly in that area, is very important for the downtown economy, which is important to the overall economy of the city. So that was the city's involvement in that. The city went through a lot of teeth gnashing, if you will, using consultants and specialty groups to say, hey, what? This is a really important piece of property for the city. We know that. We know it's in a key area for our downtown that's going to spark a lot of other growth. What is the best use of that?
And this was years. I mean, that old parking deck was, even though it wasn't wanted, it still sat there for years.
It did. I think 5, 6, 7, 8 years even, this has been in the making to the point where we are now, where it's actually coming to construction. We got input along the way when we did the study about what should we put there, and that could be everything from, let's talk to the downtown merchants who are going to live here and work here and be involved in this process, up to just anybody in the city where we're using your public dollars, hey, what do you think? Because as you know, there's different perspectives depending upon where you're coming from. Then you get all the way down to the building selection and the vendor selection. Who's going to build this project? There's, you know, public input all through that process.
And how do you get that public input?
Well, there's no one way, and that certainly has changed over even the last 3 or 4 years. We know now that for something like this, we actually do get people to come to public meetings. We often don't, because that's, you know, can be a little inconvenient for folks. That's just not how people choose to provide input as much anymore. But for something like this, we don't have to worry about it. We get input, that's for sure, which is a good thing. You know, it's the people's project, their money. They have a right to say what they want to say about it. But we'll do other things, like we'll go to a group and provide the information and say, what do you think? We may hold a meeting in a different location. We may do an email. We may do social media. We'll put stuff on our website. We'll stream all these various gatherings, or post the information on the website, put stuff in the newsletter. I mean, we have to provide the same information and solicit feedback, we know, in a bunch of different ways, because everybody doesn't get in. We don't just have three networks anymore. People are getting information in different ways, and we try to be cognizant of that and go to them where they are and be respectful of their time.
There is, you mentioned social media, there is research to suggest, Perry James, that people tend to use social media more, and that increases trust in government, but websites they use less, and that websites decrease trust in public government. Can you help us unpack that a little bit? What is that about?
Yeah, I think you said it just right. Certainly in my time in Raleigh, I saw that evolution from just putting things out hard copy to then the website to then social media and other means. And clearly, as Melissa was saying, people are listening different ways nowadays. And social media is one of the ways that they're definitely listening a lot to. So,
Why is the website negative, though, and social media is positive? What's the association there?
Well, Melissa may have a concept differently on that, but I would say that on social media, you usually can get some immediate feedback to things, or you have blogs or chat rooms or things where there can be immediate discussion and clear things up. You put it on the website, it's just kind of like data there that people read, but they may all interpret it differently.
So it feels more like an actual interaction.
Correct.
We have an email. Brian writes, planning is in the interest of developers. Through back-channel connections to the various boards and committees, look at the habitat loss further down the Cape Fear River in lieu of irresponsible development, a crude but accurate assessment, I am afraid. An example of someone's point of view on how the riverfront should be developed or not developed, Melissa Talbert. But being in a public position, you're confronted with this all the time. People who really disagree with the direction that the city of Wilmington has chosen for whatever reason. Are there ways to engage with people who disagree and maybe bring them on board? Or do you ever find that someone you think is a thorn in your side has actually brought up a legitimate point that you haven't thought about before? How do you engage there?
Sure. I think that's, that's just what we do. We're public servants, so we listen to our citizens. I think it probably is a little bit different if you're coming from a staff vantage point than an elected standpoint. But a lot of times we find that if we can provide information and a greater understanding, you know, like Perry was saying, you provide context, well, this is why this happened, and this actually happened, and you may not have been aware of it, that sort of thing. A lot of times that will help bring a more positive aspect. Sometimes it's just, you know, I just don't like this project, you know, or for whatever reason, or I don't like this decision or that or the other. That's why you have your elected body to go with what they think is either because they have all of the information, the most responsible or best use of the public investment, or one where we've heard from the greatest number of people. I hesitate to do that because not everything's a popularity contest. That's not really the responsible way to govern, I would argue. But you know where you hear a lot of input or pushback, and a lot of times people bring up great points, and that's why we get input, because we don't know unless we ask. Hey, well, this, did you think about this, or what about that, or if you do this on my property, this might happen. As Perry can tell you, on any public hearing, you know, that type of thing is going to come up, and it may have very well have a bearing on the decision that is made.
Perry James.
Yeah, I agree with what Melissa said. I would recall one specific subject that always gets that kind of citizen interest, and that's debt. You know, incurring debt is always something that, at first glance, people say, well, why didn't you just save up enough money to pay for that? What's the issuance of debt for? So you really do have to get out in front of that one. And
we should always be going after a pay-as-you-go model, right?
No, that's not correct. It works sometimes, but certainly not all the time. Spreading the cost over a life of benefit of a project usually is more manageable in terms of the impacts on citizens, and it just helps to do that. But to the point about citizen engagement, we used to go out and through town meetings with some of the elected officials, just tell them the subject today is debt. We want to tell you what the city's debt looks like, how it breaks down into different categories of debt, why it is advantageous to do this versus pay as you go all the time. You know, we didn't convince everybody, because there's always people who might say, I really do want to do things without debt. But I guarantee you we convinced some people that they had that they needed to see it a little differently than they did before. And even if we made just a slight change of their thought, it helped. And we found that very useful to big projects particularly.
Can it get discouraging when certainly the city of Raleigh is a major metropolitan area. The city of Wilmington is a smaller city, Melissa Talbert, and when you make so much effort to put information out there and then say no one shows up to a public meeting, how often does that happen? And how do you kind of keep your chin up and keep the effort going towards public engagement when that happens?
I think it depends upon the project you're looking at. Like I was saying with the River Place, we don't have to worry about that. We're going to get a ton of input. Just simply by virtue of the project. Now, on the other hand, and I don't look at it as necessarily negative, because sometimes it could just be simply a vote of confidence, I think.
When people don't show up or don't engage,
yeah,
you mean?
Because that says, okay, we're pretty much okay. Like with our city budget, that which, by the way, unlike the federal government, city governments in North Carolina have to have a balanced budget every year. We cannot run a deficit. So every year we go through a public process as we put our budget together. And if we don't have anybody or only one or two people show up, which has been the case for the last several years, and I think we've done a lot on the education side that helps, is the reason there's a balance there. you know, if we don't get a lot of pushback or citizen dissatisfaction with the way we're spending their money, then that lets us know and lets the public officials know that they think we're doing a pretty good job. I would say another way that we know that, which is the case here in Wilmington, is through our citizen survey that we do every 2 years. It's a real survey, statistically valid, where we ask a number of questions, but one of them is basically, how do you think we're spending your money? Here's the priorities. What do you think? And our elected officials use that in large part to help determine what their priorities are and how they're going to spend their money.
You're listening to Coastline. Do you trust your local city or town government? Why or why not? Here to answer your questions today about government transparency and public engagement are two municipal professionals, Perry James. He's the former chief financial officer for the city of Raleigh and now a consultant for the North Carolina League of Municipalities, and Melissa Talbert, communications manager for the city of Wilmington. If you have a question or a comment on this Wednesday, you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. You can also call us today at 910-343-1138. Competence and values are main factors that either build or diminish public trust. And that we can see playing out certainly at the national level with President Trump. You can see that people who believe that his values are aligned with theirs have less wavering faith in his policy decisions and in his competence. And those who believe that his values are at odds with theirs criticize him at every turn. Is that something that we see, Perry James, at the local level as well? If the public has a certain amount of faith just in the competence of the government, even if there's a decision made they might not understand, they still tend to have more trust? And how do you build this sense of competence in your local government?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I believe that competency can be the kind of the overriding factor that gives confidence to the citizens without getting into every project and getting into every budget. They see that every day. They see that in whether their trash is picked up on time. They see it whether their neighborhood is safe. You know, they see it from the parks they visit. Are they, you know, parks that have cleanliness to them and programs that they want and so forth. So I do think that's one of the more important things we don't want to ever overlook. The trust that citizens get there is the daily life they live, and we hope they use that then to look at the city or the county or the whatever the government unit is, you know, with the belief that other things they may not get into are equally being done with competence.
And we keep referring to the Government Finance Officers Association, or the GFOA, because of this report that took a hard look at building public trust in government. Can you just explain what the GFOA is? And you've actually played a number of different roles with that association.
Yes. The GFOA, or Government Finance Officers Association, is a national association of 20,000 or so members representing many, many local and state governments. Their whole entity is really there to promote best practices by those governments. And so they provide services, they provide advocacy, they interact with the Accounting Standards Board on feedback of things, and then they provide reports like this to kind of help provide guidance to governments and government officials on really what's important to them and to get consistency across the government stream. I was fortunate to be on the executive board in the early 2000s and kind of got to see some of that in practice. And I, you know, I do believe it because I saw it as a member there. They do promote best practices. There's a lot of effort by committees also that I was part of to kind of bring best practices and ideas and things from the local governments all the way up to GFOA's attention so it can then be advocated.
And there's so much in that that sounds great, and then you get into the real world and the practice of it. And we know, Melissa Talbert, you can put out information until the cows come home over and over and over again. And that's part of your job, isn't it? I mean, you
yes.
have to keep
mm-hmm.
repeating yourself and re-explaining and re-explaining. Can you tell us what that's like for someone who is communications manager of a municipality?
Well, I think it's a great challenge, and it's like Perry was saying, every day is different. So I think that's wonderful. I personally enjoy being a public servant, being accountable for our citizens, because it's the public's money, and you know, we have this in Wilmington $110 million budget, and we say, you know, here's how we're spending your money, predicated on the public input that I talked about earlier. So I think it's in today's environment, I think it's an even greater opportunity with all the ways that we have to communicate that we perhaps didn't have before. It's much more convenient for folks to provide input, to give their opinion. I think the younger generations, that's something that is more natural and something that is more expected. I think we'll see even more of that in the next several years.
Do you think that makes communication easier? Or is it more complicated because now you have people weighing in because it's so much easier to do that when that person might not have weighed in before?
Well, I think it's good. It may not be easier. It makes my job a little more challenging, but I think it's a great thing. The more involvement, the more engagement, the more citizens can touch their local government that has a huge impact on their daily life, I think it's a great thing. So everything that we do or the things that become available, the tools that we have now to make that more accessible, I think that's positive for the city.
We had a call. John from Wilmington asks, what is your take on the increase in traffic in the area? I mean, new developments, he says, are popping up all over the place. And this is something that we heard during the election. It's something we hear is one of the major issues for local citizens. How are officials balancing that increase in population with the needs of the city? And we'll have you answer that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. While trust in federal government is low, citizens generally trust their local governments. We're looking at why, including transparency measures and engagement efforts. Former Raleigh CFO Perry James and City of Wilmington Communications Manager Melissa Talbert are with us today. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this short break, we'll have one more segment for you to get your question or comment in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Information about your local government, how it makes budget decisions, shapes policy, identifies priorities, is probably fairly accessible. But are you interested? And do you trust your local elected officials? Today, we're looking at public trust in government and transparency with Perry James, former chief financial officer for the City of Raleigh and a current financial and operational consultant for the North Carolina League of Municipalities. Melissa Talbert is communications manager for the City of Wilmington. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Melissa, just before we went to break, John from Wilmington had asked about the increase in traffic in the area, new developments popping up all over the place. We can probably guess at where he's coming from on this, but this has been a major issue for this region at both the city and the county level.
Yes, and I would say one way that we can see the trust that our citizens provided to us in another way is at election time. And how that ties into transportation is because in 2014, the citizens of Wilmington passed a $40 million plus transportation bond that is going to do some of the things that John was to address some of the concerns that John was touching on, which is the traffic flow and our, as our citizens have told us, more walkability within the city of Wilmington. We're finishing up right now I think it's 3 or 4 mile trail on South College Road, which is going to connect to the Cross City Trail, which is basically a 15-mile trail that goes across the city that you can walk or bike. We're going to be putting in a trail on the new South College Trail is going to connect to Greenville Loop Road. There'll be a trail all that entire road, and one over on Masonboro Road. So we're doing a lot of things to make connections so that we'll be less reliant on cars. Because we know we can't we can't build roads and think that that's going to be the way out of having more traffic, because it's not. There's just not enough room in Wilmington. It's not terribly cost effective. As we move to the future, everybody riding in a single vehicle probably is not, in 20 years from now, the way people are going to be traveling to get from here to there.
Do you think it'll take 20 years for this region to increase its mass transit system?
I hope not. The other point I was going to make there is I do believe that we'll start to see more demand for public transportation, which we already have now, and we're very fortunate to have that. Certainly the system is good. It could be better if we had more funding so that we could make more stops and make it more timely for folks so that it would be more feasible for some folks. Again, I think that will evolve over time. It already has to some extent. Our city officials right now are making overtures to the county to see what we can do to collaborate more on that. So I think we'll see more of that. And again, trying to do what we can with perhaps already existing resources like a sidewalk, but may have a huge gap between this block and that block. Well, somebody that lives in, you know, X neighborhood may say, well, I would just walk down to the store if I could get there, but I can't get there. Or we start to see some of the things like in my neighborhood, like a Publix grocery store. Well, we often hear, why in the world do we have so many grocery stores? Well, it's kind of like having a CVS on the corner. You want something that's close and convenient. And now I can just drive right through my neighborhood or even walk to get the gallon of milk instead of having to go across town, get in the car, cross several intersections to get there. So things like that are happening. They're happening in little incremental things that may not be readily apparent right away. Something like a state project where we have a lot of state roads in Wilmington, like College, Market, major streets like that that the state maintains. And they're doing several big things here now, too, that I think are also going to do a lot to transform the city.
Perry James, when we look at something like mass transit and, you know, having worked in other municipalities and seen how other local governments work, you know that funding mass transit will never be a money-making proposition for a municipality. So how do you go about changing public opinion about mass transit if it's something that would make a municipality more functional, but there's still not real broad buy-in?
Well, that's a very good topic for the triangle that I live in, because we're going through that kind of discussion now and looking at, not only what are you going to do and how do you do it, but how do you fund it? And like you said, there's not a lot of transit systems that return more revenues than expenses on that. So you really have to deal with that from a broader standpoint. And again, one of these early topics that needs to get on discussion for the whole citizenry of the area. But I would say you're certainly starting it out with things like strategic plans for your government. You know, if transportation is one of those focus areas that you're already seeing is going to be stressed, you get it into a strategic plan so you can go ahead and discipline that whole feedback process and the projects that need to be done early on. You also do it in your capital planning budgets, which are multi-year, you know, usually up to 10 years for most localities. So people can start to see what the impacts of those are from their pocketbook. And then you just do the things we talked about earlier in terms of citizen engagement and just try to have many meetings that show potential ways of doing things, potential routes that might be considered, and just get those people there that will be impacted and let them give you that feedback.
Well, it seems like there's a balance between, as a municipality, bringing people along to think a certain way about a project and then getting that feedback. In other words, you know, the city is putting out information and it's explaining this is how we've done this. But if you're talking about something in a strategic plan, you're saying based on public opinion, we've put together the strategic plan based on your values and now we're going to implement it. Melissa Talbert, is some of your job not spin, but helping shape public opinion about an issue? In other words, the opposite of feedback. And I don't mean that in any sort of, you know, with nefarious undertones. I just mean educating the public about, say, the role of mass transit in a region when you've got a public who is very used to jumping into their own cars to get from point A to point B.
Okay, now I'm following you. That's a good example, because I was going to say, no, normally it's not. It is what it is. Our job is public information. It's just to provide the information. But something like that, yes, where it's more educational, where you can bring folks along to get them to understand the benefits or ask, do you want to make this investment or not? Yes, I think another example is through our comprehensive plan. As you know, we went through an extensive public input process when we put that together a couple of years ago, and we're now starting to see the implementation on a manifestation of that. Certainly not easy all the time, but it's based on, very much predicated on, what our citizens tell us is important to them. So something that could impact traffic would be as simple as, well, put a an apartment building, if you will, near a bus stop, so that it makes it more convenient for the people that live there to hop on the bus instead of getting in their car to go from point A to point B, or having that nearby grocery store, or things like that. So yes, it will manifest itself in many different ways, and a lot of times the decision will be made based on the public input, and then but that may have been 2 years ago. You know, a lot of people are different here that weren't here then.
And they say, I wasn't part of that public input process.
Yeah, or, they may not remember that or think about how that input that they did provide might actually attach to this, that, or the other project, but it in fact does. So it is an ongoing process to provide education and information.
It was in San Antonio, Texas, that City Council floated a proposal to validate parking for anyone who attended the city council meeting. And part of the idea was that paying for parking might be a barrier for some citizen engagement. And then in the city of Fort Collins, the city council had a meeting with a local brewery to discuss broadband internet capabilities and also did door-to-door recruitment for meetings in neighborhoods when they were gathering public input. Is that, Perry James, a relatively new trend to try to find ways to do away with barriers to civic engagement? And should city council or city staffers be out there knocking on doors to get people engaged?
Yeah, I like the idea that you were citing about trying to get them into the downtown area so they don't have to pay a parking fee. But, you know, everybody can't do that, or some even might not think that's the fair thing to do. But yeah, I think it's an evolving thing that governments are trying to be creative on that. And certainly my experience as I go around the state in my current job is I see a lot of governments going out to the people, trying whenever they can not to force them to come in to, you know, a downtown that sometimes is not inviting in terms of being able to park all the time, but going out to their place. You know, there's lots of citizen advocacy groups in most localities. You know, they love for you to come out and answer questions, do some of that education that Melissa was talking about.
You're listening to Coastline. Do you trust your local city or town government? Why or why not? We have two municipal professionals answering your questions on this Wednesday. Perry James, former chief financial officer for the city of Raleigh, now a consultant for the North Carolina League of Municipalities, and Melissa Talbert, communications manager for the city of Wilmington. Just a few minutes left for you to get your question or comment in. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Recently, City Council had another, the special use permit for the Healing Place came up in front of council, and it's come up now multiple times. It's been continued for more information and more clarity on various issues. Melissa Talbert, first of all, help us understand, why has this been a more complicated process than what perhaps people originally thought? And what are some of the citizen concerns?
I think this is one, it's fairly unusual. The concept sounds good. You know, it's a treatment center. We know that we have a huge need in our area. But then you begin to look at the impacts to the immediate surrounding. It could be a resident or a business in this particular case. And so even though from a conceptual sense it sounds really good and, yes, we want it, but on the other hand, well, hey, how is that going to impact my business or my home? And that's always a balance for projects like this. So I think that's what we hear most in any situation. If we do hear concerns, and that's why we have public hearings and why council is proceeding so cautiously on this one to try to get all sides of it before they make a decision. When you're, again, you know, at the drawing board, literally, that's one thing. But when you get it down to, okay, and the sidewalk's going to be here and the street's going to be here and this kind of individual is going to be coming in and what's the traffic count and all those variables that come into play, you really have to let the process work itself out and hope that you make the best decision. But in a case like that, we have huge input. Like I said, when it's a project that's really going to impact the individuals closely, we generally don't have to worry too much about getting the input, the word spread. You'll get the input. And council takes all of that into consideration, and then they have to make those very difficult decisions. You have to, again, weigh the need of the larger community and what needs to happen, and, okay, well, is this the right location? Well, if it's not, then where are you going to put it? Because we have to put it somewhere. Again, you could say that about any number of projects. This just happens to be that one that you were mentioning.
Some transparency measures like Open Checkbook, Perry James, have come into vogue. But explain to us what Open Checkbook is. And do you think that that is one of the transparency measures that really moves the ball down the field? Or is it checking a box? Or what are the issues there?
Yes, a lot of governments have gone to Open Checkbook. It's really just the technology that's now advanced so that you can provide kind of input to your records online. You know that wasn't the case many years ago, and it's still not the case for smaller governments who may not have a sophisticated accounting system where it's not technology able to do that. But the idea is for anybody to be able to go in and see what you've spent your money on or what your revenues are in any kind of level of detail they want. I think it has evolved further than that because just that raw data sometimes, again, getting back to those consequences, sometimes they're just not understandable and you don't have a good, quick way to give that response back. So I think it clearly is one thing you don't want to not do because people would view you're hiding things if you don't do it. So you should do it, but I think you should go beyond that.
And how do you do that? How do you provide context for those numbers? I mean, it seems like that could almost take a whole other department to provide the extra information.
Yeah, well, I think that's, that every department should have some goal of trying to advance the understanding of the residents and what's going on. And, you know, every transaction you do has dollar signs on it. That's just generally the way it works in government. So, but every department have some role in that. But you can also do, I think we talked about a little bit about a citizen report or a popular report, which is one of the GFOA programs that they give awards for. Those are reports that take your big 150-page annual report and put it into a smaller, maybe 12-page report that has pictures and charts, more vocabulary that the typical person on the street is familiar with. That helps a lot, and that takes some of that checkbook and then gives it a broader understanding.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Perry James, Melissa Talbert, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org, get the podcast, or find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.